The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Midwest Swing on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Follow Cold Omaha at Cold Omaha MN on Twitter. Follow me at Brandon underscore Warren on Twitter, and my producer Andy Carlson at Andy Carlson Show on Twitter. Also, since you're listening to the Midwest Swing Podcast, we are now on Twitter as well at Midwest Swing Pod. So lots of Twitter action for listeners to get in on. And it's funny, before I get into that, you can also subscribe to us on iTunes, look for Midwest Swing, and get this podcast goodness delivered right to your phone or iPod, iPad. I don't know what these kids are using these days, but whatever you use for iTunes, we can get you there. And it's kind of funny, I talk about Twitter. Twitter is kind of what spurred today's quote-unquote emergency episode, and it's basically on the basis of how much angst is out there, and don't get me wrong, it's on Facebook too, about the Twins and payroll. As the payroll gets finalized, as the offseason comes to an end, every single offseason, like it does, there'll be a point where the projected payroll comes out. Twins fans will run with that number. They'll compare it to previous years, and that will kind of drive the narrative for what maybe the average fan is going to think moving into a new season. The payroll numbers that have come in for 2016 look to be a little bit beneath what they did last year. Again, last year was a surprisingly good season, and fans, I think, are expecting the team to then pour some more money into the roster in an attempt to continue this positive direction. And on the surface, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I think for my vision of the offseason, when I started thinking about it after the last out of the last game of the season last October, was, you know, the Twins are probably not going to be as active as the typical fan is going to want. You know, the typical fan is going to see a team on the cusp of the playoffs needing maybe one more big player to take that leap, especially in an American League on the whole that was crazy last year. And actually, now that we've played out the offseason, is going to be even more crazy in 2016. So with that in mind, I kind of thought going and getting maybe like a Jason Hayward. He was pretty much the only free agent that really fit that bill, in my opinion. You know, really take that leap, really take that jump with another superstar type player, which those guys rarely hit the free agent market at his age. I believe he's 26 years old. And it was pretty clear the Twins weren't going to do that, especially from a position of need. The outfield really wasn't that kind of deal for the Twins this year, in this offseason. And in fact, they have actually subtracted from it in the sense that they traded Aaron Hicks to New York. But if it wasn't going to be an offseason where they were addressing adding another superstar on the free agent market, I got the sense that it was going to be a pretty low-key offseason. In most respects, it has been that way. I mean, Byung-ho Park is a pretty big signing. And in fact, if he meets his projections, will be a really nice piece of that offense. But people are not so excited about that just because it wasn't a big money signing. Well, it might actually be a good opportunity for value because you're signing a guy that's in those pre-arbitration years to a reasonable deal. Now, he's not going to go through the process of cheap salaries for 3 years and then arbitration. He'll be a little bit different coming over from overseas. But anyway, for his production that he's projected to get, assuming he can adjust to the game like Jung-ho Kang before him, there's a good chance that this is going to be a nice value signing and is going to be one of the better bats signed in the offseason from a value standpoint. And I think people will look back, if they are the kind of people that look back on their views and allow them to change, will be the kind of people who say, okay, well, that made sense in that moment that they went out and got another bat and it worked out. But it is frustrating to people that want to see the Twins spend more money than they have. And I want to dive into a few subjects that I put together before we get into the reader questions. And this is basically going to be a Q&A episode, and I think that's going to be a good way to drive discussion. I wanted to basically tackle what everybody was feeling head on. And I can't remember all the arguments about Twins payroll that I've taken on in the 5+ years that I've been on Twitter. So I think we got some pretty good interaction going on here, and I think it's going to be a pretty good show. I do want to kind of get out in front of the idea that I could possibly be anti-labor. Now, that's a popular narrative, not necessarily a false one, in that, you know, you want players to have their value held down just because, you know, that view is, you know, if players are playing and they're playing well, they should be paid as though they're playing well. And I get that. And the other thing too is, you know, fans always are quick to get upset about how much players make, but it's owners that are making money, obviously, you know, hand over fist, especially in a game that's as healthy as baseball right now. You know, there's $3.7 billion in payroll paid out last year and reportedly $7.5 billion in revenue. So, I mean, the owners are still doing very, very, very well. So I don't want to get to the point where I'm being called anti-labor, that I don't think players should be paid what they're worth. I'm keeping my argument within the framework of the payroll structure that baseball has laid out, with, you know, 3 years of a player basically making $500,000, 3 years of arbitration, and then you get to test your wares or you test your value on the free market. I'm not going to call people payroll whiners. I'm not going to call people POLAD pocket protectors. I don't believe in engaging people that way. And I think people on both sides of the argument make good points. And I'm going to be honest. I don't really know where I find myself on that argument. I know the perception of me as I talk about it on Twitter is that I'm a POLAD pocket protector to the people who feel the need to call people those names. But honestly, I do understand where people that want to see more money put into the team come from. I think it's unrealistic to expect the Twins to be the Yankees. You look at the Yankees. In fact, I have a payroll document, a spreadsheet that was shared to me from Seth Stoes of TwinsDaily.com. And basically, he says his document here says that the Yankees put back $219 million in their payroll against $208 million in revenue. So that's a team that spent more than they actually brought in with the club. And I don't know if that's necessarily accurate, because I think teams are still pretty quiet about their revenues as best they can. They don't really want people to know how much they're making. It's part of the deception that makes people not really trust ownership in the first place. But if that's accurate, that's the only team spending anywhere near that amount. Detroit, a team that everyone wants the Twins to be more like as well, is spending 68%. That's the second highest, and still nearly 20% more than the average team is spending on a revenue percentage basis based on what they're bringing in and publicly stating is revenue. Now, the next closest to the Dodgers, again, the Dodgers are a team that you kind of see as Yankees West. They're bullying people out of free agents, although they got bullied out of Zach Greinke by the Diamondbacks. So it's funny. Sometimes money doesn't win out. Sometimes it's just a change of scenery thing or something else that gets the ball rolling. But back to the Tigers, their owner is Mike Ilitch. He owns Little Caesars and is like 89 years old or 80-something. So the big thing for him is he's basically kicking the can down the road to when he's just not around anymore. And in fact, he wants to win a World Series while he's still alive. And in fact, he's been basically doing that since he's been in charge lately, since they acquired Miguel Cabrera and kind of have made this last run, so to speak. You can argue about whether or not that's been successful. They haven't won a World Series. They've made it to the American League Championship Series a couple times, and they've been a mainstay in the playoffs over the last decade. But flags fly forever. The average fan will oftentimes say, yeah, making it to the playoffs is cool, but if you didn't win the World Series, it doesn't really matter. You know, we saw that with the Twins fans for that entire stretch towards the end of the Metrodome run in the first year at Target Field, where, you know, they weren't happy with going to the playoffs and getting throttled by the Yankees. You had to take another step. You had to figure out a way to get past that and, excuse me, fell short and started losing 90 games per year. So, you know, it's not realistic to be like the Yankees, of course. Is the Tigers realistic? Honestly, I don't really think so. But at some point, I think you should be somewhere in between where the Twins are and where the Tigers are. And that would require a little bit of a bump and get the Twins maybe over the average payroll to revenue number that the major leagues has. So anyway, the spreadsheet that Seth had furnished for me had the Twins at 48.9%, just under the 49.5% of payroll to revenue percentage that is the average in the big leagues. So the Twins are in fact spending right around what teams around them are spending from a revenue to payroll basis. You know, is it frustrating to see the team spending so much on mediocrity, especially in the last few years when they had payrolls over $100 million with 90 losses? Yes, and that's absolutely something that has to be addressed into the future, or maybe already has been when they're getting the younger players up that are going to be cheaper. But at the same time, it would be still encouraging to see them make that jump to maybe where they're spending $130, $140 million, like the Rangers, the Angels, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's where the Twins should settle in long term, and hopefully the revenues as the team gets better will match that. The one thing that's not clear is how much higher the revenues can go with Target Field, because you know you're out of that honeymoon period with Target Field, I think, from an attendance standpoint. So if you can start selling it out again, I think there is room for a bump. And I think there also is a room for a bump, and this is kind of the unspoken elephant in the room, in media contract. And so when the Twins' media contract is up and they renegotiate it, I think there'll be an adequate bump in payroll there too. And I know fans are going to, you know, roll their eyes. Well, we've been promised these bumps in payroll. We've been promised these bumps in payroll. And it seems like the team is just pocketing it. Well, you can count on zero fingers how many $100 million payrolls they had at the Metrodome. So there's already been this leap to an entirely different level of payroll. Again, it's worth noting there's been inflation in the game, and so maybe they haven't kept up with the inflation that the rest of the league has seen. But again, they were in the, you know, the $50, $60, $70 million range. Now they're in the $100 to $110 million range. Now, that's enough to sign a couple players. And I think my overall takeaway, this is the overarching theory that I've kind of come up with in recent weeks, and I was talking about this to a couple of people on Twitter, and I don't know that it's going to be popular, but I think that it's the idea around Target Field, was never that the Twins were going to necessarily be impact players in the free agent market, you know, signing an Alex Rodriguez when he's at his peak. But if you can keep your superstars at home, that is your Miguel Sanos, your Byron Buxtons, the guys that you create internally, if you can keep them home and settle into that middle to upper middle tier of payroll, I think Target Field has served its purpose. You're looking at the Metrodome era when they couldn't keep anybody. I mean, granted, most of the guys that left, it didn't come back to bite them necessarily, but if you can keep your stars that you create through their free agency years, and you have to start creating them, which I think the Twins have done a better job of lately, I still think that's a significant step in the right direction and validates building the stadium. Before you consider contraction, relocation, or any kind of thing that was plaguing the team 15 to 20 years ago, obviously. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if the Twins can keep their superstars at home, you know, it's still an improvement on, you know, the Metrodome days where they were forced to offer Torrey Hunter 3 years when he went and got, you know, I believe it was five from the Angels. When you had to sign guys, you know, they did sign some of those intermediate deals where you chew up some years of arbitration, some years of free agency. Some of the ones that I remember are, I think Johan Santana signed like a 4-year, $40 million deal. I know Torrey Hunter had a deal like that, and Joe Mauer had a deal like that too. In fact, I don't know if Joe Mauer's took up a year of free agency or not, but I'd have to look. But really the only quote-unquote big free agent that they had kept at home was Brad Radke, and that was on like a 2-year and $18 million deal, which is a drop in the bucket these days. And it was even really a drop in the bucket back then with how much the Yankees and Red Sox were out in front of everybody spending-wise. The one last thing I wanted to close with before I start jumping into reader comments was a graphic shared by Scott Lindholm on Twitter. I believe he's a contributor for Beyond the Box Score on the SB Nation Network. He's a good writer. He's a really smart guy. He said that the Twins have the eighth highest fan experience cost at roughly $230 per game. Now, I think the methodology behind that is to take a family of four to the game and like have a hot dog, a soda, and a souvenir. That's crazy. I mean, eighth highest in the game and third highest in the American League behind the Titans of the Red Sox and Yankees. Now, that strikes me as a little bit wild. I would also like to see the methodology, what's going on behind the curtain, so to speak, because I had a lot of people after I shared that on Twitter say, well, you know, yeah, that's all good and well, but there's plenty of good, reasonable options to get fans in the door, whether it's college night, whether it's family section, whether it's a number of different things. But still, I mean, it's maybe that's an underrated part of marketing that the Twins haven't really seen, that they're maybe a little bit outpriced outside of their market. Again, as long as they keep filling up the stadium or coming close to it, I don't think they have to adjust too much. But at the same time, you know, attendance has dwindled a little bit while the team was bad. And I think it's a nice bump this year. That's one thing I didn't pull up before I went on the air here. But it'll be interesting to see if that can go towards revenue, see how revenue can continue to grow, because obviously you can't sell more tickets than the Twins had been in previous years, obviously in the first few years of the stadium when they were packing the doors and packing the stadium every single night. The payroll never got up to that $140 million. So it'll be interesting to see if there's other ways to find that revenue and find a way to bump to the upper middle portion of payroll instead of just the middle portion. So with that, I do want to dive into the comments that I solicited both on Facebook and on Twitter. There was a really good turnout. In fact, I was a little discouraged on the first day. I had 2 days of topics come up, and I was a little discouraged on the first day because, you know, not many people had reached out. You know, a lot of people want to joke about payroll stuff because there's, you know, obviously my following is largely people who don't get too wound up about this sort of thing. But I promised any question that came in good faith, I would answer. They're not all going to be exactly payroll. It'll be a little bit of a Q&A too, but you know, we'll dive right in and let's just get started. Sam Umbert on Facebook asks, do you think the club has enough in the bullpen to make a run in the playoffs? Part of my frustration is bullpen related and how they seem to not have addressed what they should have. If you look at the Royals' blueprint of success, it's largely based on a premier bullpen, which can turn a game from 9 innings to 6 innings. So do you think they have enough? Well, I think a lot of it's going to hinge on the health of Glenn Perkins, because if you have Glenn Perkins healthy, I honestly believe they've pretty much already decided to put Trevor May back in the bullpen. And so you've got a nice back end of May, Jepsen, and Perkins. Now, May is probably the most likely to be an elite reliever in the grand scheme of how relievers are looked at in today's game, where you have to strike out more than a batter per inning. Don't walk anybody, you know, just overpower people. Perkins can do that when he's right and when he's healthy. Now, the older he gets and the more injuries mount, the less likely that is to be. And honestly, Jepsen's just a really nice back end arm as long as he can keep himself from walking too many batters. And that's been his issue pretty much his entire career, is, you know, the great stuff, throws real hard, has good secondary stuff, but just walks a ton of batters. So you do have a good back three. It depends on what version of Casey Fien shows up this year. Obviously, battled injuries, didn't strike anybody out last year, but he closed on a pretty nice run through the last, I think, 2 months of the season with like a 2-something ERA. You need the strikeouts to come back a little bit. The nice thing is he doesn't walk anybody, and out of relievers, you really can't dance out of danger by putting guys on with the free pass. That might make him a good guy to pair with Jepsen in that seventh inning, you know, late in the sixth inning kind of deal. It, you know, Casey Fien's kind of a wild card for that bullpen, because if he can be anywhere near what he was even just 2 seasons ago or 3 seasons ago, all of a sudden you've got 4 guys that are, you know, very, very solid relievers. The Twins also believe that they have found something with non-roster invitee Fernando Abad, that he was tipping pitches last year with the A's. And if that's true, if they can get him back right to where he's mowing down lefties and can get a couple righties out here or there, they're really in a good position to left-handed. And he's obviously a big bump or a big boost off of Brian Dunsing, who is, you know, not coming back to the team. Beyond that, you know, the rest of the bullpen is wild cards. I mean, Ricky Nolasco will probably be out there. I don't think he's going to have a rotation spot. You got guys like Alex Meyer, not really penciled in right now. Ryan Presley's in the mix. I'm sure I'm missing somebody because I don't have it in front of me. But it projects right now, I think, to be an average bullpen. And with some variance or with some improvement could be an upper third of the American League bullpen. You know, is that good enough to carry a team that's got a pretty good offense and a so-so rotation? I don't know. I mean, it's got a pretty good chance to be better than last year's bullpen, I would say, you know, especially getting a full year out of Kevin Jepsen. Is it good enough to take the Twins through the playoffs? I mean, the Royals' blueprint for success, I don't think teams really are big on blueprints because you can't really copy what other teams do. You know, it's not a copycat league in that sense. I think some teams will try to do that. In fact, I think Baltimore is kind of the poor man's Kansas City right now. But honestly, that's five or six guys that just throw gas, strike guys out, and all kinds of stuff. I don't think the Twins can try to copy that. I think the Twins also have a better rotation than the Royals and have a bit more power. So, you know, you put the best thing together that you can with the resources you have in front of you, and you go to war. Is there a chance the Twins are better than the Royals this year? I think there's a fair chance. But honestly, is it a great chance? No. You know, you're talking about the defending world champions. And to try to copy their success, I don't really think that's possible. Joe Braga on Facebook wants to know, the Twins don't spend to their max every year. So theoretically, they have $30 million floating around for future years. That is not the case. And they are on record as saying they won't roll that money into future years. That seems dumb. I do think Terry Ryan is notoriously conservative in that I think it just comes down to not wanting to overextend kind of deal. Spending to the max when the team was bad. See, the tough thing about payroll right now is that with the Metrodome closing, the Target Field opening, the Twins have only been very, very, very good for 1 year since Target Field opened in 2010. You could say they were really good in 2015, but that was a pop-up year. They didn't go out and sign a bunch of players or make a bunch of moves to make it good. It was mostly internally with the addition of Torrey Hunter. Now, this is the first year where it's really been like, okay, well, you're pretty good, and we want to see you dump some more money into the team. And then the added wrinkle is, oh, you've got a bunch of kids coming up that you can't buck, whether it's 40-man roster spots, whether it's future spots. So there's a lot of nuance and a lot of wrinkles that might sound like you're protecting the team's bottom line, but honestly, from my standpoint, it's just me wanting to be upfront with the fact that I kind of get that they don't want to sign relievers to three-year deals if they think that Nick Birdie or Jake Reed or JT Chagua or Taylor Rogers, Yorman Landa, any number of guys can help them in the very near future. Now, you can trade relievers. So there is some on the opposite side of things, like, well, okay, if you sign a reliever to a three-year deal and then you have a guy who's ready, you can just trade the reliever, right? Yeah, I mean, the way that the relievers pitch and how it goes up and down, you know, you might get caught in a situation where you sign a reliever to a three-year deal, he pitches poorly in the first year and you can't trade him and then you're stuck with him, and then you maybe can't shoehorn a kid onto the roster. I don't know if that's what the Twins are afraid of. That's the kind of things I think about, though, when I think about future roster building that the Twins don't want to get into. You know, they don't want to sign a pretty good reliever, you know, a Tony Sipp, for instance, for 3 years when they think Taylor Rogers can do the same thing maybe even this season. Now, that again speaks to Terry Ryan's conservative nature, but I think it also speaks to the fact that the Twins believe strongly in their player development. And if you look at how their player development has worked over the time that Terry Ryan has been in the organization, I think more often than not, he's right. You know, they did have a stretch where they weren't drafting very well in the basically the post-Mauer era, something I wrote about for the Prospect Handbook. But they've had some pretty good feathers in their cap for player development. And I think that keeps costs down. I don't think that the Poleds hate that. Don't get me wrong. I think there is still a certain level of, you know, not wanting to overextend financially. But at the same time, you've seen who the Twins spend on in free agency. They get kind of stuck in that middle tier. You're talking the Ricky Nolascos, the Irvin Santanas. Personally, for me, if I'm dabbling in free agency as a GM, and let's just hypothetically say I get to take Terry Ryan's seat for an offseason, you either got to live at the top end of free agency or the bottom end of free agency. Getting stuck in that middle is not good. You end up with these 30-some-year-old pitchers, and you are paying for basically no upside. You need the guy to be who he's been for 5 or 7 years, especially if he's in his mid-30s, and you're banking on that for no real good reason. You know, the idea that Ricky Nolasco was going to be the same guy that he had been with the Marlins for his entire career for another 4 years is not a good proposition. And then you also look at Ricky Nolasco. He's kind of an every other year guy where he just blows up. He doesn't have a good fastball. So he's, you know, there's going to be issues with how he ages if he can't spin it as good as he did before too. And you've kind of seen it's been a disaster. You know, Nolasco has thrown 190 some innings in his first two seasons combined with the Twins. He had averaged that many innings per season for his entire career up until that point. So there's only bad things that can happen. You're not getting a ton of upside with a Ricky Nolasco. Irvin Santana, you know, a little different, a little more electric arm, but he's still past 30, still has a ton of miles on that arm. When they went out and got Phil Hughes, great signing. You go on the low end of the free agency totem pole, 3 years, $8 million a year, and then they kind of compounded things by turning around and giving him an extension. Now, if he can be even what he was in between the first 2 years of the Twins, he could be a fine signing. He can eat some innings and all that. But the problem is, too, they went and started signing pitchers when they were starting to have guys come up through the minors, you know, the Tyler Duffys and that kind of thing, the Kyle Gibsons, too. And it was like, well, you really needed these pitchers 3 years ago when you were signing the Kevin Correas and Mike Pelfreys of the world. And again, those guys are gone, and they served their purpose. And honestly, it was the team probably telling us, hey, this team's not going to be very good. But I can understand why fans want teams to go with a higher ceiling option. You look at the Phillies signing guys like Jeremy Hellickson or going and getting guys like Jeremy Hellickson when they're in their Twins rebuilding stage like the Twins were 2-3 years ago. At least you're getting somebody with a still untapped ceiling or someone who has at least shown something in the past. Not true of Kevin Correa. Not really true of Mike Pelfrey, and I think that's what's more frustrating to me than payroll floating around, honestly. And hopefully, Joe, that you don't think that's a cop out to your question, but it was a long winded answer that maybe didn't address any of it. But I'm sorry about that. Paul Swiden of Fangraphs says they're run by a family worth $3.8 billion. They can probably swing paying a couple more relievers. I get that. I get that they're worth a ton of money and all that stuff. It's just for me, it doesn't make sense to give out a big deal to a reliever if they think internally they've got those guys coming up soon. But they have to push those guys aggressively too. And so I think they're trying to do that. I think they have to be careful. You know, they've already had Birdie and Reed and even Tyler Jay experience hiccups as professionals. You can push guys aggressively, especially since all three of those guys were college pitchers. But you can also ruin guys by running them through the ringer too quickly. And so – you know, I know they don't want to get tied up in a three-year deal with a reliever that might stink in the first year. But at the same time, you know, they've also had success with these minor league signings, the Casey Fien, Jared Burton. I'm trying not to defend the team, but at the same time, I don't know. I didn't love any of the relievers on the free agent market this year either. I mean, Tyler Clippard, who's still out there, is pretty good. But I wouldn't say there's no downside there. He's struggled with walks and hasn't had as many strikeouts either. So, you know, taking the cheap route to build a bullpen has worked for a lot of teams, San Diego, Tampa Bay in recent years. I can't get too upset about that, even though I know that was kind of what was viewed as the Achilles heel of the 2015 Twins. Eric Pleiss went on kind of a funny rant on Facebook. I promised to talk about anybody who sent something to me in good faith. But this is kind of funny. He just said, buy all the best players, spend all the money, put Kevin Slowey in the rotation, hire Nick Blackburn to coach the coaches that coach the bullpen, burn it all down. So basically, he was just going with the fan who just wants everything to be destroyed route. And I honestly understand where that's coming from. There's still frustration from – I think it's hangover from the Twins not doing well in the playoffs the last time they went. And I think that was – basically made much worse by the fact that the team was horrible for four straight years, was expected to be pretty bad last year and turn things around. But I don't think they did enough to really get back into people's hearts and get people really crazy about baseball again. Hopefully this season can do that, but I don't know. Honestly, I saw it as like a 78-79 win team going into last year, and they overachieved a little bit. I don't see this team as drastically more talented than last year. you are going to get a full season of Miguel Sano, but you also have a full season of Eddie Rosario needing to prove that he's not going to regress, that he can control the strike zone. There's a lot of moving pieces. How good is Tyler Duffy going to be? Where does Phil Hughes line up health-wise, and what can he do to get closer to what he did in his first season, full season of Irvin Santana? Kyle Gibson seems to be a kind of guy that's on the cusp of a breakout. They've got a lot of nice moving pieces, and there, so there's a lot of leeway with this team because a fair amount of it's young too. But at the same time, I don't see it as an immensely more talented team than last year. You could have another 78 to 82 win team, but if that means the breakout of Byron Buxton, which I think everyone's kind of waiting on, that's still, again, a positive. But I don't think fans are going to really gravitate towards a team that's right around 500. They're looking to be a contending team, especially when you consider the landscape of the American League, where I literally don't think you can rule anybody out on day one. I think it's the first time I've been able to say that in a long time. Ben Antel wants to know, why haven't they traded Plouffe yet? Honestly, this is the theory I've been kind of working on. I don't think Plouffe has a ton of value on the market. And it's not because he's not a good player. He hits lefties really well. He's starting to hit righties, plays good defense. Starting to get a little expensive in arbitration. We'll talk about that a little bit more later too. But you're thinking about a free agent market that has had David Freese on it for the entire offseason. He's still unsigned. David Freese does a lot of the same things that Plouffe does. He's got that proven winner label that some GMs really like. The only issue is he's older than Plouffe, but I think in a lot of ways he does a lot of things that Plouffe does, and he still hasn't signed yet, and I think a lot of teams aren't going to look at Trevor Plouffe as a real attractive trade option when they're going to have to pay him or make a decision on paying him in the near future, and he doesn't do anything really that Freese does and that they couldn't go out and get on the free agent market on probably a pretty reasonable deal. So I think the Twins would trade him if the right offer came around. The other issue is, what do you look for? I mean, do you look for a B-plus prospect in AA that might or might not help you? Do you look for relief help? I hate trading everyday players for relievers. I don't think you're going to get a really fantastic – if you could get a fantastic reliever in, like, his second year, like a Will Smith. I know that's a name that the Twins fans are really excited about, the Brewers left-handed reliever who's a dominating – force, and I think he's actually going to close for the Brewers this year. If you could get that for Trevor Plouffe, that makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways, but the Brewers are rebuilding. They don't need a Trevor Plouffe. You know, they're not going to take him and then try to flip him for something else, especially if again, that return is a B prospect. So honestly, I think they're hanging on to Plouffe because he has more value to them than he does to other teams. Yeah, one guy who took this submitting questions and ran with it was Nick Moen, a friend of mine who is on Facebook and Twitter. I don't have his Twitter handle handy, but if you can find Nick Moen, M-O-E-N, he's a pretty interesting guy. He's worked with now the name is escaping me. There's Inside Edge. It's a scouting service in the Twin Cities. He's used that to jump to, I think he's now working for a team called the Portland Pickles, which, as ridiculous as it sounds, is a minor league team out west where he lives. But anyway, he's got some pretty good insights, and he sent me five or six questions, so I'm just going to plow right through those. He says, okay, if you're a GM for a week, what do you do to get this team ready for 2016? I honestly do a couple things. I have to look at my situation for a fourth outfielder and how confident I am that Byron Buxton breaks camp with the Twins. If I have any reason to believe that I'm going to need a backup center field option, I start looking at either Austin Jackson as a free agent or Will Venable. And basically it's going to boil down to how much playing time I think I can offer. If I have a lot of playing time between the three outfield spots, I go with Austin Jackson on a one-year deal. If I have a little bit of playing time, I probably go with Venable. But honestly speaking, you're looking at – you still have Danny Santana who can play center. You could probably teach to play the corners. You have Oswaldo Arcia – who you still have to find room for because he's out of options. I don't know that I would necessarily add an outfielder, but those are the two guys I'd be looking at. I think the infield's pretty much set. There's nobody I really like out there enough to make a move. You know, on the bullpen front, you could go with Tyler Clippard and really go for it. And I think that's probably what I would do. You know, add him on a two-year deal if I could. But honestly, I think they're close. You know, I would offer a couple minor league deals to a couple more lefties. Manny Parra is a name that I really have my eye on. He's been pretty good with the Reds the last couple of years. Not this year, but he did have a year where he struck out like 10 or 11 batters per nine. So, you know, other than that, though, it's pretty boring. You know, we've reached a part of an offseason where I have to be honest with you, there's not that much I would do. You know, if that question had been posed to me 2 months ago, then, yeah, I'd have all kinds of you know, crazy theories and that kind of thing. But right now it's kind of mild. How many games do Park and Murphy play in 2016? I don't think he's asking necessarily those two combined. As far as Byung-ho Park, I think you're looking at 140, 150 games, assuming he's healthy enough and adjusts. If he adjusts like Jung-ho Kang did, especially with the big second half, he's probably your everyday DH. You might play him a little at first, let Sano DH or Maurer DH a little bit. But they're going to try to have him in there every day, assuming, you know, that he doesn't wear down too much over the course of the long season. John Ryan Murphy, I think, will start on like a 5-2 or 4-3 platoon with Suzuki on the short end. I think Suzuki will have the strong end of that platoon to start with. But I think as Murphy proves capable, as he, assuming he does, you know, you haven't really seen him in a full-time role because he was behind Brian McCann with the Yankees. Whatever Murphy can handle, the Twins will throw at him. They don't want, I don't think, Kurt Suzuki's option to vest for next year. And so they'll give Murphy as much playing time as he can handle. Hopefully, to be honest with you, he can handle it. Nick also asks, do you envision the Twins being around 110 or 120 million in payroll for the next 5 years, regardless of inflation? Honestly, I hope not. I hope that they drive that needle up. When the Joe Mauer contract comes off, it'll be time to pay Sano. It'll be time to pay Buxton, if not before then. And I really still hope that they do sign a big free agent that comes out in the next few years. There's going to be ample opportunity with guys like Steven Strasburg. Hayward can opt out in 3 years. There will be opportunities to bring in another star to supplement. And honestly, that's been my theory all along, was supplement your young players with stars while they're cheap. Hayward made a ton of sense for this team if you want to bring him in to play right field next year. You got Byron Buxton in center making $500,000. You got Miguel Sano in left. You got Miguel Sano at DH. You got Miguel Sano at third base. You could do a lot of things if you brought in Jason Hayward on a deal. And honestly, it, you know, it just didn't happen. I don't know if the Twins have the payroll flexibility. I don't know how the Twins feel about deals with opt-outs, because that's kind of a new wave of things too. But I just thought that was the opportunity. That's where it was to go out and get a star. And hopefully they continue to push the needle up. I'd like to see it settle in 140, 150. I am an eternal optimist when it comes to that. I get a lot of flack for that, but we haven't seen the perfect opportunity for that to happen yet. You're still talking about target field revenues going towards a good team for basically the first time in team history. So I want to trust and believe that they will keep pushing the needle forward, but I don't have any backing for that. If they start letting players get away like Miguel Sano, like Byron Buxton, this is me saying, not for real, but if fans burn target field to the ground, I would understand. Because this park needed to be built to keep your stars that you create. So I understand if people get upset about that. When Maurer's contract is up, what do you envision the Twins doing with him next? He isn't going elsewhere, right? That's the next question Nick has. Honestly, I think Joe Mauer might retire at the end of his contract. And if not, I think they go year to year with him based on how he plays. I really think 2016 is pivotal. I've said that ever since the concussion. This is kind of my drop dead, this is what's got to happen year. He's 33 early in the season. If he has another year where the bat's just kind of like swinging a swim noodle, honestly, you got to make him a bench player, because the Twins are going to be too good to be giving him regular playing time moving forward. And so, yeah, honestly, if he doesn't play well this year, I would feel pretty strongly that he retires after his deal is up, if not sooner. Do I consider starting Buxton at AAA if he struggles in spring training? Yeah, I mean, if you believe you've got someone that can handle center field in the meantime, you know, you've traded away Aaron Hicks, so that does make it a little bit difficult. But Danny Santana could play center. You could put Eddie Rosario out there. Rosario, I think, can play a capable center field. But honestly, the only way I would send Buxton out to AAA is if he's just lost in spring training. I don't suspect that's going to be the case. He works really hard and has been a star in the minor leagues. You know, spring training was where Aaron Hicks shined. I don't really believe that Buxton is any further behind than Hicks was when he was struggling either. But I don't know. The more interesting question for me is how long is the leash on Buxton heading into the season? And honestly, if he can play really good defense and put up like a 7, even a low 7 OPS with some stolen bases and some, you know, making something happen with bunts until he starts driving the baseball, I think that does enough for you to keep him up in the big leagues. Nick's got another one. What do you do with Arcia and Danny Santana going forward? Honestly, I think you got to have Arcia as your fourth outfielder and Danny Santana as your top utility infielder. And, you know, that's the fact of the matter is you are not going to promise either of them any playing time. I prefer my fourth outfielder be able to play center, but Santana can play center as kind of a super utility guy. That's why Arcia fits as a fourth outfielder. And then you just kind of plug and play him whenever matchups work. And if Arcia starts driving the baseball, starts taking walks, starts hitting lefties, or starts playing better defense, you can find more playing time for him, especially if there's any regression from Eddie Rosario. But, you know, it's kind of on these guys to prove that they can be as good as they were two seasons ago, because nothing in 2015 showed that they're anywhere close to that. He asked, is Rosario, Buxton, and Kepler a realistic outfield of the future? I believe so. I don't know that – Rosario is probably the one I believe in least of those three, but he's also probably – actually, not probably. He's for sure been the best in the big leagues of the three. So it'll be interesting to see that you know, how it shakes out. You know, I think we were all kind of salivating over a Rosario, Buxton, Hicks outfield. But I think Kepler's going to be a really nice player, a really, really, really nice player. And hopefully he can shoehorn his way into the outfield mix in the near future too. And that's another thing that complicates what you do with Arcia, because there's a lot of power. I don't think anybody believes in his value as far as trading him. You know, if you were to trade him to somebody who's looking to take him on as a reclamation, you're not getting anything worth anything. So you don't really want to sell low on a guy that's got that kind of power. You know, slugs 450 as a 22 or 23 year old. But honestly, if Kepler could leapfrog Arcia pretty easily and become the starting right fielder, again, that probably also means moving Sano back on the dirt, and either that's with Maurer being out of the picture or with Plouffe being out of the picture. So there's a lot of moving pieces. I think, you know, this is a team that could look drastically different even a year or two down the road. And, you know, I hope Terry Ryan is the guy that they trust and can put them on that path. Last question from Nick is, agree with a lot of what you tweet, but what do you believe the Twins payroll should be at come opening day? Honestly, I thought 120 would have been a good mark, but that's high. But I do buy into the idea that they should spend a little more. Honestly, though, I don't want to get stuck in that mid-tier where you're paying guys like Ricky Nolasco too many years and too many dollars to not be very good. I think, again, I'm not saying I could do a better job. Don't get me wrong. It's just that continue with the buy low in free agency when you're bad, especially when there's guys who have ceilings they could reach. I thought Colby Rasmus made a lot of sense for this team a year ago. They didn't sign him. He had a big year for the Astros, and Eddie Rosario had a big year for the Twins. It worked out for everybody. Don't get me wrong. It's just that I don't believe in sitting in the middle and just plucking guys that kind of fall into your lap. I would like to see the Twins as players on higher-end players if they're going to be in the free agent market. Otherwise, just stay out, develop from within, and sign your guys and toe the company line because you're not doing anybody any favors with the Nolascos of the world. Clarence Swamptown, one of my favorite followers on Twitter, you got to find him if you're not following him. He says he wants to see the team spend more and spend more wisely. I think he's 100% right. I believe they can spend more if revenues go up, but I also believe, you know, there is room to push the needle just a little bit more. I don't know. We've heard some hints from Darren Wolfson, who's got a fantastic podcast called The Scoops on 1500 ESPN. check that out too, but not until after you've listened to this one, of course. He's said some things like he believes the Twins have flexibility to go make a move in season, which is great. I mean, if the Twins decide they need something, if they start out flat, maybe they go 8-12 in the first 20 games or something like that, they could go out and get somebody that kind of gives them a boost, or I think they'd probably let it ride a little longer than that. But, honestly, I really wanted them to spend more money in the standpoint of going out and getting one more elite player. But when you look at payroll, from a stepping back and looking at it standpoint, the payroll this year will be lower, but it's really just because they subtracted Torii Hunter, who didn't have a great year on the field. Is that really cutting payroll to have Torii Hunter retire? Is it really cutting payroll to trade Ricky Nolasco for a bucket of baseballs? Like, no, that I don't view that as cutting payroll, even though it's an addition by subtraction, and the actual financial implications are that the team costs less money. But I would view cutting payroll as trading good players, as letting good players walk. And so for me, that hasn't happened in recent seasons, again, because they haven't had good players, but also I need to see evidence that they're not going to keep the good players that they develop before I get too wound up about it. Jimmy Dosen wants to know, how soon do you buy out free agent arbitration years with Miguel Sano? Simple answer to that is yesterday. I can't recall a player starting out this hot that didn't manage to become a great, great player. The only one I can remember that was close in the time that I've been watching baseball is Jeff Francoeur. And Francoeur never walked, never, ever, ever walked. I believe he had like his first something like 100 big league plate appearances where he didn't walk. So if you can get I don't know if I'd go 10 years. That's pretty crazy. But 7 or 8 year deal with Sano struck tomorrow, I'm all over that. Coach JC, he's at Hot Takes on Sports on Twitter, wants to know, why not load up on a couple quality bullpen arms? Sick of being an afterthought in free agency. I think it came down to years. The Twins weren't comfortable giving multiple years. I do have a pair of eyes that I trust that watch the Phillies on a regular basis. He said that nothing about Antonio Bastardo inspires confidence. So when you look at the numbers, 11 strikeouts per nine, you're looking at a guy who feels like a shutdown guy. But this guy that I trust, and again, I love stats and I'm a big sabermetrics guy, but I do kind of have a little bit more respect for the gut feel part of the game than I did a couple years ago. We've seen guys who had good stuff and good numbers not inspire confidence here. You're talking about Jose Mejarez, who had really nice numbers a few years ago for the Twins, but you didn't ever feel confident when he was in there in big spots. There are guys that have that. And with Bastardo, 4 walks per 9 innings, I can't imagine anything driving Twins brass more crazy than too many walks. So honestly, I didn't think that was ever going to be a fit. I wanted it because I thought he made a lot of sense, but I think deep in my heart of hearts, I just knew, it's not going to happen. So the guy that I think they missed out on is Sean Kelly. Signed a 3-year deal with the Nationals. I believe it was like $5 million per year. That's a guy, right-handed guy, 8, 9, 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, and is just a really nice middle relief option in today's game. And I don't know why they weren't in on him. It sounded like, from what I've heard, they didn't love his medicals. And, that's a big deal for the Twins. If you don't think a guy can hold up for even half of the contract or 2 of the 3 years, you're going to stay away. And the Twins are, again, notoriously conservative, maybe to a fault. And I think that's what's kept them off the free agent relief market. Now, RDS2112 on Twitter says, I thought it was dumb to sign Plouffe, should have traded him, kept Hicks, and saved $3 million since Sano is the third baseman of the future. Honestly, from a me standpoint, that's probably what I would have done at the beginning of the offseason too, without knowing what the Plouffe market looked like, and without knowing that Matt Wieters was going to re-sign, or he was going to take the qualifying offer from the Orioles, because I really wanted the Twins to address catcher and figure out their logjam. I didn't want to trade Aaron Hicks. Obviously, I'm a big Aaron Hicks believer. But if the Twins thought that this was the best that Aaron Hicks was going to get in a Twins uniform, that he could bring back a future starting catcher, and you could clear your logjam all in one move, maybe that could turn out to be a shrewd move. I still think, though, that Hicks has a little Carlos Gomez in him where he could turn into a star in the right situation. He can't hit much as a left-handed hitter, but at the new Yankee Stadium, if he can poke a couple extra balls over the fence, he could turn into a superstar pretty quickly. And that's a worry I have, because there's no real certainty that John Ryan Murphy can be an everyday catcher. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. I think the Twins will let Plouffe go to free agency when it's time. And it'll just be, you know what, you gave us 5-6 really nice years, and thank you for that. You know, you were a first-round pick. You gave us what we expected, and, you know, bon voyage. And, you know, that's maybe not the wrong move, because he does have some things in his game that make you wonder how he'll age. He did come to playing good defense late in his career. Maybe that won't continue. And I really do believe that Miguel Sano is athletic enough to play third base long-term. The outfield is going to be an adventure, though. And with a lot of pitchers that have balls in play, I don't know how long the Twins are going to put up with that. David Mueller says he doesn't like long-term contracts, and the Twins are set at starting pitcher. Both true. Would a free agent center field option for depth work out? You do need to let the prospects play out. If you have any reason to believe that Byron Buxton cannot crack spring training, and you do not want to give center field to Danny Santana, then yeah, you got to go out and get Austin Jackson. But I don't think the Twins are. I don't think the Twins feel that way at all. Les Vegetables. It says Le Vegeta. I don't know how to say it. He says, easy to say they should have spent more, but on who? Who did they miss out on? And that's a good point too. I mean, most of their positions have players who are competent or capable. This isn't 3 years ago where they were just horrible. So honestly, I really think they should have signed Sean Kelly or been in on him. That's really the only guy I felt like they've missed out on this offseason, other than Jason Hayward again, who was just a pipe dream. Sarah Hagen wants to know, why are they never even rumored to be in on the top-tier free agents? Great question. I don't know. I think it's, again, the conservative nature. The Twins want to build from within. That's one thing where, you know, Terry Ryan has said on a number of occasions, if there's a guy out there getting strikeouts, we're interested in him. You know, and I get that. I don't disagree that that's probably necessarily where they're coming from a foundational what we'd like to do, quote-unquote, standpoint. But at some point, you have to be rumored to be in discussions or looking to acquire one of those guys, and you never hear that. I think, you know, this is a team that's 5 years in a row had the worst strikeout rate in baseball. At what point is there something more than just smoke? At what point do you start providing some fire? Pun intended, I guess. And they've tried to address that in the minors and build up moving forward through the organization. It's going to be something that you're going to see when the Birdies and Reeds come up. And even the Jose Barrios is too, someone we haven't even mentioned through the first 54 minutes of this broadcast today. I think they're trying to do that. From a big free agent standpoint, again, you're still dealing with, okay, the Metrodome, that was never going to happen. The first year at Target Field, they were already a stacked team, and they've been horrible in Target Field since until this last year. If they continue to not be interested in big-time free agents after this year, it's really, really frustrating to me to not at least hear them, you know, especially as money starts coming off for certain other deals. Although, again, I still do think that the main goal is going to be to create, to develop, and to keep their own superstars. Because when you create a superstar from your farm system, who knows his medical history better? Who knows what his likes and dislikes are? Who knows what he can and can't do as a player better than you? It's not a bad thing, honestly. I would like to see more of a Cardinals thing adopted where it's, okay, you develop some superstars, but then you go out and get a Hayward. You trade a big prospect like Shelby Miller, you get a Hayward, and you go for it for 1 year. And then when Hayward goes away, you've still got a Piscotty and a Grichuk and a Matt Holliday, who you went out and signed a few years before then, to back him up. You know, add some more layers to this thing instead of just trying to plug and play with your prospects all the time. And so that's where my level of frustration matches those, you know, as far as fans go, where it's like, okay, well, at some point you've got to be interested in some big free agent. You can't let 50 some odd million dollars be the biggest free agent contract you ever hand out. Andrew Walter, a Twins fan from afar, his follow-up to that Sarah Hagen question, because they were interacting with me in kind of close proximity there says, why is this largely given a pass by most local media members? And honestly, I don't know that it's necessarily given a pass. I think it's just it's the certainty that they're all resigned to is, yeah, the Twins aren't going to go out and get a big guy. You know, it's really hard to rip somebody if you don't feel 100% like they're in the wrong. Have the Twins been wrong not to sign a superstar in the last 5 years? Maybe, but I don't feel 100% to the point where I can write a 1,500-word takedown of the Twins and Terry Ryan and Rob Antony and Jack Goin to the point where I feel like I can say that and then basically present that to them because they're going to read it and then say, yeah, this is what I feel. You tell me how I'm wrong. I just don't feel that crazy about the fact that they haven't signed a big-time free agent in the last 5 years. Again, if they don't sign Miguel Sano, if they don't sign Byron Buxton, you're going to see a lot of that. But that's still 4 or 5 years down the road. All right. And the last question that came in, it came from Alex Bigot, unfortunate last name, I guess, but recent Twitter follower to join the stable. He says, do you think the Twins are done, or is there any chance of going after Clippard, or others still? Honestly, I really do think the Twins are done as far as free agency goes. I think they might pick up another two organizational lefty type to bring to spring training like they did that year. I think it was like 2005 they brought Dennis Reyes and CJ Netkowski, who's now on Fox Sports 1. They brought a handful of lefties, and Reyes ended up winning the battle out of spring training. But I think they'll do that kind of thing again. I think Abad is the prohibitive favorite. But if they brought in a guy like Manny Parra, honestly, that I wouldn't complain too much. Anyway, that's all I got for you. We went almost an hour. I hope I addressed all the topics head on as best I could. Thanks for joining us at Midwest Swing Pod. You can find us on Twitter. You can find me at Brandon_Warren, Warne. You can find producer Andy at Andy Carlson Show. And finally, besides finding us on iTunes, you can find us at Cole Omaha MN on Twitter. You are listening to Midwest Swing. Thanks for joining us on the Cole Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.